Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we continue to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the beginning of the Civil War, this hour we are entertaining the question, how do we teach children in this country about the Civil War? And we'll have two guests with us. Ken Stark is an award-winning book illustrator and painter. He's an editorial cartoonist and freelance graphic artist who has lived and worked in rural Illinois and also in Wisconsin. He is largely self-taught. He has done a couple really beautifully illustrated books about the Civil War, including most recently Marching to Appomattox, the foot race that ended the Civil War. And he also illustrated Seeing the Elephant, a story of the Civil War. He has done other books as well, and he lives in a restored cabin, 1800s log house that has been reconstructed by Ken and his wife in southwestern Wisconsin. Ken, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Mary Coyke is also joining us. Mary is Deputy Director of Communications, the Civil War Trust, and editor of Hallowed Ground. They have a curriculum for young people for learning about the Civil War, elementary school level, middle school, and also high school. Mary, thank you very much for being with us. And we should also say that the Civil War Trust is America's largest nonprofit organization devoted to the preservation of our nation's endangered Civil War battlefields, and they promote educational programs and heritage tourism initiatives to inform the public of the war's history and the fundamental conflicts that started it. And we thank you, Mary, very much for being with us today. Hello.
Hi, Kathleen. My pleasure.
Yeah, great to have you here. Let me ask both of you, because I know once you get started on the Civil War, it's hard to stop. You want to see the battlefields. There are endless books that have been written, fascinating stories, and it's courage and philosophical differences. It's just an endlessly fascinating history. How did you get rolling on your start of Civil War history? Ken?
Well, I was asked by my publisher, Putnam's, to come up with a biography on anyone I chose. And I'm quite the reader, and I just read around all different odds and ends and all books unconnected without a theme. And I think I came across Grant, who I've always been interested in. And I was reading a book, I believe it was by Gene Smith, on Lee and Grant. And particularly interested in Grant's last year writing his memoirs. And while he was dying of cancer, his aim was to provide for his family after his death. And I was starting to be interested in his life, and I proposed a story based on his last year and perhaps showing the Civil War in flashbacks, and that didn't quite work out. So I started reading backward in his life, and I came to the story of Appomattox, and I looked no further after that.
That was the story.
Story.
Yeah, it is an amazing story. We'll hear it in a moment. Mary, how about you?
Well, you know, I'm a fairly young woman who works in Civil War history, so that's a question I get a lot. And the sad part is I don't really have an answer. I've been interested in the Civil War for pretty much as long as I can remember. I was one of those children who dragged their parents to reenactments when I was 8 years old and in New England. So really, I can't even remember how I got started, but happened into a career field where really custom made for me. The literary history major who now works in communications and edits the magazine for a history nonprofit. It's pretty perfect.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It's such a fascinating topic that the slightest thing gets a lot of people hooked, and it becomes a lifelong passion.
Yeah, it sure does. My passion is Lincoln, but of course, Lincoln takes you to so many other places.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start through your book here, Ken. It seems to me as though 150 years after this, we still have pretty radically different ideas about what caused the Civil War, what people were fighting for. I know that the books that you have illustrated or that you've written, do look at both sides here, and that you're able to capture, for young readers, Ken, the esteem in which Lee was held, and, of course, the esteem in which Grant was held as well, that there was something about the goodness of the people who were guiding them, for the most part, that you have to look at rather than look at the issue of slavery.
Yeah. Yeah, the personalities that course through this period, the Civil War, are amazing. And you can almost just point your finger anywhere and come up with truly interesting people and interesting stories. As far as Lee and Grant go, they were both, you know, they had their similarities and differences, but they were both they both had extremely strong wills and a very powerful sense of duty. And this runs through all of the people that that you might read about in the Civil War, or most of them anyway. And I think that's part of what attracted me to these two men, and the men that kind of floated around them, is their amazing sense of will to do what they thought was best.
Mm-hmm.
They both had opposite ideas of what was good for the country and what was right for the country, and they both fought valiantly to, you know, to achieve those ends.
And how were you, and you capture that? I really am so envious of people who can draw. I can't do a darn thing with a pen, including write my name very well. It just looks awful. But you capture the spirit of who these people were in your drawings, which people can't see. It's radio, but they're quite beautiful. How did you do that? Was it reading about them and also looking at pictures of them, or how?
Oh, this is more where my wife comes in, Chris. She's quite the research person, and this book would be nowhere without her efforts. And she got a lot of books. We ordered a lot of books through the Viola Public Library, which is nearby, through Interloan, and we might have had 20 books at any given time on the Civil War, various periods, mostly toward the end. And I might read through a whole book just to get a few quotes that may be a little different than you might get in other areas. But so I did a lot of reading. And, yes, I looked at a lot of pictures. I have a book of Lincoln, which is all the pictures known, collected in one book.
Oh my!
That was very important, for especially for seeing the elephant. I had one picture in there showing Lincoln. And the thing about Lincoln is that he looked so different in so many of the photographs, especially when he was young. He had often had different hairdos, and you know, a beard or no beard. And he had kind of a chameleon face sometimes. He had that wonderful little half smile that seemed to come through even at the hardest times when the photographs were taken. And, but, you know, you look and stare at these photographs and you try to get them into your head, sort of
right,
like holograms in your head.
I understand that.
The same with Lee and Grant. Grant does not have a, what you would call a face with striking characteristics, except for that one of the very strong-willed expression that he always wore, and no less with Lee. But I just had to stare at their photographs and draw them again and again until I was able to draw them without a photograph so that I could draw from different angles.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how we teach about the Civil War. I know that one of the things that you do is present a two-week Civil War curriculum for elementary and middle school and high school students. Let me first ask, before we talk about that curriculum, is the Civil War, and with this commemoration of the Civil War, widely taught, and is it taught quite differently depending on what state you live in, Mary?
You know, it's a really interesting question. I think right now, with the 150th anniversary, there is a renewed interest in the Civil War on a lot of levels. You know, both publicly, if you just look at the number of you know, news clippings we get because you know, they mention our name or the name of someone we work with, you know, there is a truly renewed public interest, you know, adults, children, everywhere. And so I think you are getting, you know, with the anniversary, a bit more of a resurgence in teaching Civil War history. And partly that's this idea that, you know, many, many schools are looking at cross-disciplinary ways of teaching. And so this is something that's in the news, so it's kind of a current event, too. So you do have that crossover. You know, as far as how it's taught across the country, you know, as with any subject, a lot of times it varies less by who, you know, where you are, and more by, you know, the specific educator you have. There are some teachers who live in places you might not think would be, you know, hotbeds of teaching the Civil War, who are really passionate about the subject, and because of that, place more emphasis on it. There's, of course, you know, places that do have battlefields or other historic sites nearby have a greater opportunity to do field trips and things like that. But, you know, there is some variation based on geography of how it's taught. But I think, you know, for the most part, it's less differentiated that way than it once was.
Mm-hmm. Ken, you're a northerner. Is it hard to write about a southern perspective? I think you've captured it well in your books, but was that a difficult task?
I come from a journalism background, and so maybe it's not as difficult as it would have been otherwise. But, you know, obviously I knew going into these projects that I had to be even-handed, and that wasn't really an impediment. I do have my opinions, and they're fairly strong, but I tried not to let them, you know, seep through.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about this issue, and I'd like for you to address this more, Mary. People have very strong opinions about the causes here, about slavery, about Lincoln, about Lee. It's hard not to have a point of view here. This is a hard subject, I would think, to teach.
You know, you're right. It is something that many people are very, very passionate about. You can just note the sheer numbers, and when you look at how many reenactors there are across the country, or how many people visit historic sites, you know, how many people go to Gettysburg every year. It's, you know, really, it's a fascinating subject which makes people interested in it, and the more interested people get, the more passionate they get in their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are very many, you know, people who are passionate one way or another. You know, and sometimes it's based on where they grew up, and sometimes it's based on where they live now, and sometimes it's based on one particular book they read that, you know, somehow appealed to them or triggered something in them, or a movie they saw. It can be anything. But when it gets down to it, the Civil War is, it's a very defining American moment in a lot of ways, and so there is a lot of common ground that you can talk about and you can teach from. You know, you can, when we talk about the Civil War sesquicentennial, you know, in some anniversaries there's a tendency to call them a celebration. Well, this particular one, it's very clearly a commemoration. There's, you know, you can celebrate the bravery, perhaps, of the men who fought on either side because they were doing something profoundly courageous, and, you know, putting their lives on the line for what they believed in and, you know, whichever beliefs they happened to hold. But when you get down to it, it's a moment in our history that no matter which side you look at it from is somewhat tragic. You know, there very much is common ground that you can teach from. And that you can use to sort of find those universal messages and those universally applicable lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is much about this war that is tragic. The number of people lost, the family against family aspect of this. Ken, you mention doing reading, which is how we learn about things. Did you do a great deal of travel to the nation's Civil War battlefields?
Well, my wife Chris and I did go down to Appomattox Courthouse and walked around the area, which is, you know, it's a very, very touching place to be. It's very beautiful now. It's a park-like setting, and the buildings are restored. The grounds are well kept, and it's a little bit difficult to try to transport yourself back to the days when it was swarming with gray and blue and cannons sunk and wagons burning and the sound and everything that goes along with the one of the last battles in the Civil War. We also went to Gettysburg on the way down, and as we were passing through an area where the author of Seeing the Elephant was from, and after seeing that town, we passed down through Gettysburg, and that is, you know, just an amazing place.
Mm-hmm.
We were there in pouring rain, and we went up to Little Round Top. I wanted to see it, just to be there and to see the field from that point. And a bus came with loaded with high school kids, and they got out into the rain, and a man was telling them about the story of that part of the battle. And in spite of the rain and everything else that was going on, some of the students were crying, because it's just such a remarkable place to know what's there. Monuments are all over,
mm-hmm.
boulders, everything. And you're looking down to where Chamberlain's men look down to, when the people coming up. It's just an amazing place. And I wish that we had been to some of the other battlefields, but not as yet.
Yeah, well, you will, I'm sure. Mary, what is a good age for students to go to some of these battlefields? When does it start to really enter your mind as important and something that you will remember?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. It can be history can be presented in a lot of ways, and it can be presented in an age-appropriate way for a variety of skill levels, for a variety of grade levels. You know, we've seen children who are, you know, very, you know, comparatively very young, out, you know, say even, you know, very young elementary school, kindergartners, first graders. And they can grasp some, perhaps, they can understand this is something special and this is something important. But, you know, as you get older, there are very new, profound ways you can understand what happened there. You know, for younger students, you want to give them something tangible. And so that's why battlefields are a great introduction. It's something they can, you know, go and see and understand because they've seen it, and it's not just something they're reading in a book. But also, you know, it's also something scenic and, you know, attractive, and they can, you know, you'll see any number of children playing on the cannons. And while some people will say, you know, that's not completely appropriate, they are forming a mental understanding of, mm-hmm. of things that happened. But there's a variety of different ways you can teach at different ages, and that's part of why when we do a curriculum, we do it at different levels and emphasize different things at different levels.
Ken mentioned Gettysburg, which indeed is an extraordinary place to go. It just stays with you forever. What about other battlefield sites? Have many of them been restored? Are we losing battlefield sites that we shouldn't be losing?
Well, you know, about every day, we lose about 30 acres of historic battlefield land.
Every day?
Every day. I know. It's hard to believe. There were, you know, about 10,000 battles fought in the Civil War. You know, everywhere from, you know, skirmishes in Vermont, quite literally, down to Florida and out to New Mexico and Arizona. So Civil War, you might think only Virginia and Tennessee when you think about, quote, Civil War states, but it really is a much wider swath of our country than that. And there are some battlefields that are, you know, beautifully preserved. You've got places like Shiloh in Tennessee that are really, you know, very pristine. There's very little intrusion, and you do see almost exactly what the soldiers who fought there saw. Mm-hmm. In places like Gettysburg, which are incredibly profound. But there are parts of even battlefields like Gettysburg that have been lost to development. Just this spring, we worked with some other nonprofit groups to help the national park there by just under 100 acres that had been almost entirely surrounded by the national park, but it was privately owned and it had been a golf course. And now that that's been bought, it's going to be incorporated into the park. So there is really historic land that has been lost already, and there is some that fate still hangs in the balance, and groups like ours are trying to set that aside.
Let's talk about what you saw in Appomattox. Is the house where Lee and Grant met that was offered by a merchant still available for viewing by the public, Ken?
Yes, it is. It has been restored. And, yes, it's very much like it was at the time. You can walk partly into the room where the signing took place and into the other rooms as well. And as far as I know, it looks very similar to the room as it looked back at the time of the signing in 1865. If some of the articles in the room are not original, they are replicas, as far as I know. And but yeah, there's another place where you get quite the feeling for what went on before. The other buildings are restored as well.
Such an important location.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls and we'll take some emails as well. We're talking about how we teach the Civil War this hour of the program. Ken Stark is with us. He is from Wisconsin and he is the author of Marching to Appomattox, the Foot Race that Ended the Civil War. And he is the illustrator of Seeing the Elephant, a story of the Civil War. We're also joined this hour by Mary Coik. Mary is Deputy Director of Communications for the Civil War Trust and editor of Hallowed Ground. The Civil War Trust has a 2-week Civil War curriculum that they make available for elementary, middle, and high school levels. Teachers can download it, and you can do so for free from their website, or you can buy a spiral-bound copy. I'm sure there are many teachers who are putting together units on the Civil War as we commemorate the 150th anniversary starting this year and into the next few years. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your phone calls. We're going to start with an email. This is from Mary Beth. We live on the East Coast, D.C. and Central Pennsylvania, and would like your thoughts on what Civil War museums and battlefields you would most highly recommend to guests with limited time, but who want to have vivid experiences. Gettysburg is close, as are Bull Run, the Wilderness and Sunken Road in Fredericksburg, Virginia. I like Fredericksburg for its visual power. What are the best ways to see these places? Any other places of interest to put the Civil War in historical context? Let's start with you, Mary.
Oh, well, that's a great question. The area she's talking about here, kind of the Mid-Atlantic region, is just absolutely filled with Civil War history. Gettysburg is, of course, probably the place that, you know, if people generally see one battlefield, Gettysburg's probably the one. Other places in the general vicinity that are truly beautiful and, also incredibly historic. Antietam is one she didn't mention, which is out in, a little bit further west in Maryland. But in September of 1862, the bloodiest single day of the war. And in a greater historical context, the Union victory at Antietam is really what prompts Abraham Lincoln to issue the Emancipation Proclamation and gives him the opportunity to do that. She mentioned the Fredericksburg area, where if you're looking for kind of the greatest concentration of truly major battlefields, that's a great place to head. Fredericksburg in Spotsylvania National Military Park is down there, and that actually commemorates 4 of the largest battles of the war, and they were all fought within 18 months of each other. Because Fredericksburg is quite literally the halfway point between Washington and Richmond, the two warring capitals. So that park takes under its wing Fredericksburg in December of 1862, Chancellorsville in May of 1863, and then the Wilderness and Spotsylvania Courthouse in May of 1864. And that's really, you know, they're all within a, you know, driving distance of each other, very close, and really, truly historic sites. The writer also mentioned Bull Run, which is another great twofer, if you will. It's the battles of First and Second Manassas, two very significant battles, obviously. First Bull Run are being the first really major land battle. In terms of innovative ways to take in some of these sites, I'm actually, you know, sorry for the plug, but one of the greatest new things you can do is they're called battle apps. And these are it's a new initiative of the Civil War Trust. And they're free downloadable iPod tours or, you know, iPhone tours. They're GPS-based.
Oh.
Yep, so it'll have a little flashing dot that shows you exactly where you are on that battlefield, and there's the map showing the troops moving over where you're standing. And it's also a little bit of a tour guide in your pocket. We've videotaped and included in the app some of the top historians, literally giving you a personal tour, you know, that you can watch while you're standing there. And it's them standing on the exact same spot you are discussing the history. We've also recorded first-person accounts of the battle. You have someone who was in a regiment that fought on that site giving you reading his experience, the account he wrote of what happened there. And so it's a growing series. So far we've done a little Round Top and Devil's Den at Gettysburg, which we discussed how moving that is for some people earlier, those sites. We've also done the Battle of Fredericksburg in Virginia. And just a few months ago, before the 150th anniversary, we did one for First Manassas. We're looking at doing, you know, it's an ever-increasing number we're doing. The list of battlefields we'd love to produce these for is fairly substantial. But we are looking at Chancellorsville, which is another one of the sites we just talked about, being one of the next ones coming out.
10,000 battle. That's a phenomenal number, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. It's a long wish list.
That's a long wish list. What about you, Ken? Are you working on any other books that will be looking at different battles, either in a fiction or nonfiction fashion? As we commemorate the Civil War?
Not right now. I guess I'm moving on to other subjects. I have a few manuscripts out being considered, but none of them have anything to do with the Civil War.
And what about places that we've mentioned here? Are there other battlefields that you really want to get to?
Well, Mary just inspires me to go see a lot more battlefields down in that area. Of Virginia and Tennessee and Georgia and so forth. Yeah, I would like to see more. And I wish we could have seen more on our little trip, but we were under time constraints and we couldn't. But I had to get back and start on the book.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would like to see a lot more of them.
Let's go to Andrea from Richland Center. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. I was just curious as to how they both felt about, say, the celebrations of this anniversary being put on by, like, the state of Virginia, where there was not even any reference to slavery, just the Southern Balls commemorating expensive admission to these Southern Balls commemorating the Great Lost Cause or whatever, hanging on to the old states' rights, but not completing the phrase states' rights ability to treat blacks as property. You know, I find it kind of disconcerting that all these years later, you know, we still don't seem to be addressing that, and we're going along with the glorious lost cause. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrea. Mary, you want to start?
You know, there are certainly, as we said, there are a lot of very deep-seated beliefs and interests related to the anniversary. You know, and there are any number of you know, events being put on by a wide, wide variety of different entities, whether it be something that's officially sanctioned by a state commemoration commission, or if it's a local event, or if it's something done by a private museum or something along those lines. There's really a tremendous number of anniversary events going on. But I think for the most part, the things that are being put on by larger organizations are being very thoughtful. You know, they're very cognizant of the idea that the Civil War was a somewhat transformative event. You know, it really changed a lot of things in the course of the history of our nation. You know, and I think you are finding a lot of people being very thoughtful about that. You know, there are, of course, some things to the contrary, but I really do think for the most part it's quite a thoughtful commemoration as opposed to a celebration that's done without that proper respect and cognition of all the various aspects of this history.
In your book, Marching to Appomattox, you write at the end of the book, and there's an illustration of Grant and Lee shaking hands. Each respected the other, you write, Ken, but not his cause. Do you want to amplify on that?
Yeah, that's true. Of course, they were poles apart as far as their allegiance went. Grant was a steadfast Unionist. He felt from the beginning that the Union had to fight to keep the South in the United States. And Lee, on the other hand, was a staunch Virginia man. And his family was there, everyone, his friends. He was raised there. He was, from the start, from very early on, seen as a leader, a very strong, powerful man among men. And he chose to stay with his state, and that's what he did. He turned down the top job in the North that was offered to him, fought very strongly for his side.
Let's go to another email here from a history teacher, Cliff in Brownsville. This is a subject close to my heart as a teacher of U.S. history. Teaching my students about the Civil War has always been exciting for me. Two summers ago, I took a driving trip to many of the sites, beginning with Gettysburg. Also drove to Charleston, South Carolina, to see Fort Sumter. My trip included stops in Georgia and all of the Gulf states, including the home of Jefferson Davis and Vicksburg. It was a two-week trip, and it could have gone much longer. I wish I could afford to take my students on such a trip. Truly memorable. It would be a great excursion for students. I'm wondering if any classes do that kind of thing. Mary?
You know, I'm not aware of anyone who goes on a trip quite that awesome. That sounds like my kind of vacation, let me tell you. But, you know, there are plenty of classrooms that do do field trips to battlefields. You know, sometimes it's one that's nearer by to home, you know, within easier driving distance. But I do know a lot of places will do a field trip that's sort of a more general American history excursion. I've of some schools that have done things where, say, they'll start in Boston and they'll go down the eastern seaboard to Washington, say, as the southern end, and they'll make stops in Boston, they'll make stops in New York, and many of them will then go out to Gettysburg as part of that and then mm-hmm. continue on down and go to, you know, the wonderful museums on the Mall here in D.C. But then there are places where, you know, you might live in, say, Wisconsin, and there isn't a battlefield particularly close by, but do really wonderful things with teaching Civil War history by going to, you know, museums of more prominent figures in the Civil War, or house museums and things from that period. You know, it's wonderful to be able to take the kids out on a battlefield and give them the full tour of that, but you can do wonderful things with teaching history in another historic site, too.
We go to Hugh in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I think some of the irony of the Civil War, of course, tragedy is clear, but irony, too. For example, you mentioned Grant and Lee at the beginning. General Grant issued an order to prevent Jews from entering his section when they're at war. He didn't want them around his army men. The contrast, of course, would have been the Confederacy. In fact, the first Jew in the United States Senate was Judah Benjamin from Louisiana, and Benjamin served in the cabinet of President Jeff Davis in the Confederacy. Compared that to, you know, with the anti-Semitism of Grant. Irish Catholics in New York were some, among those who rioted. Of course, they tended to be Democrats, and Democrats were not always strong supporters of the war in the North. And they were among those who rioted and even burned down a black orphanage. You had the American Indians, many of whom had slaves and fought on for the Confederacy against the Union. In New Orleans, at the beginning of the war, you had the Free People of Color, the FPCs, who marched and wanted to join the Confederate Army. They were not allowed to, but these are some of the interesting kind of things. I know one of the earlier callers, you know, just wants to make it into black and white, and to one side is all good and one side is all evil. I think the war had good and bad on both sides, and I'll leave it at that.
All right, thanks, Hugh. Ken?
Yes.
You want to respond to that?
I've heard some of those charges. I remember reading about the charge against Grant and the Jewish situation. I believe he rescinded that order and regretted it, the situation. And my understanding is that he was trying to stop the running of materials to the South. And rightly or wrongly, he may have assumed that some Jews were responsible for that. That's my understanding. I could be wrong.
And I guess that the response we're getting in some ways indicate how difficult this issue remains. Let me put this one to you, Mary. An email from Frank in Green Bay. Is not the biggest failure of teaching of the Civil War the fact that teachers ignore the reality that the South won? Legal subjugation of blacks continued for more than 100 years after the war. The definition of race in the U.S. is still dominated by the white racist one-drop rule. And culturally, the South now dominates areas of public policies like imprisonment and notions of justice. There are many other areas where the dominant cultural norms are those found in the pre-Civil War Southern white ruling elites.
You know, I think that gets to the point where when you talk about the Civil War, you can't just talk about, you know, a brief period in time of 1861 to 1865. The issues that, you know, caused and built up and erupted in our Civil War stretch so much further back than that. And the repercussions of it, as that writer indicates, you know, for many people, stretched, you know, up until the present, throughout the 20th century. And, you know, in some people, you know, in many ways, it continues to resonate today. And that is, you're right, why it's such a profound topic for us as Americans to discuss.
We go to Jean in Marshfield. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I had the opportunity for many years to live in Washington, D.C. when my children were young. And in trying to give them an appreciation of that very important point in American history, my husband and I used to take them around to battlefields. And one thing we particularly tried to show them was battlefield reenactments, which are very popular. You'd probably be surprised to realize that there are thousands of people that have sort of an alter ego of a Union or Confederate soldier, and they reenact battles on the battlefield in full regalia, sometimes with cavalry charges, authentic down to their scratchy woolen underwear, pitching thousands of white tents, eating hardtack, and it really brings the whole thing to life. And I'd suggest that if anybody is planning or thinking about touring battlefields, if you try and coordinate your trip with a time when a reenactment is going to be taking place, it's really memorable.
And how did your children, how old were they, Jean, and how did they respond to the reenactments?
They were, usually middle school, lower high school grades, upper high school grades. And they were totally enthralled. They're all very interested in American history. I mean, you can't attend one of these things and see a cavalry charge and hear the rebel yell and sabers flashing without being, you know, totally moved by it, thrilled by it, really. And I'm sure with the anniversary of the Civil War battles coming up, there'll probably be a lot of enactments that you can find on the Internet.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Thank you, Jean, very much for the call. There are many, many people who do this so authentically, as Jean referenced. Have you seen some of those, Ken, in Wisconsin?
Yes, we have. Two or three in Boscobel. And they are really, really terrific events. And I remember we were sitting in the stands watching one of the reenactment battles. And there was a child sitting next to us with his father. And I'm not sure how young he was, maybe 7 or 8. And he was asking his father, what country are they from? And which side is the best side? And which side won? And I thought that was interesting because, yeah, for me anyway, because you have to explain a lot. There's so much to explain, and it's not easy. And I'll pass it on to Mary.
You're right. It's not easy, Mary.
No, reenactments, Jean is absolutely right. They're a fantastic way to capture the imagination of young people. You know, from, as Ken just said, smaller children who are sort of being exposed to this for the first time. And a lot of kids, they'll see these black and white pictures in a book, and, you know, it doesn't occur to them that these were things that were in living color and that they were moving. And so seeing those lines of troops moving on the field, it really does capture their imagination. And for slightly older students sometimes, some of these reenactors, and a lot of them actually consider themselves living historians because they take it so seriously.
Yes.
And they want to be so authentic. It really grabs them that these were, you know, people not much older than me who went out to fight and in these harsh conditions. It really can be a profound educational tool. And it doesn't necessarily even need to be a full-scale battle reenactment. There are a lot of smaller encampments, say, where it might only be 10 or 12 guys out there. But in an instance like that, it might be a great way for you and your children or your students to really interact with them. Most of these guys are really happy and willing to have one-on-one conversations and tell you about their rifle or tell you about what's in their haversack or about their tent or their uniform. And that sort of interaction really does a tremendous amount to capture some a young person's imagination.
More phone calls and emails in a moment. We're talking about how we teach about the Civil War this hour of the program. Mary Koik is Deputy Director of Communications for the Civil War Trust and editor of Hallowed Ground. They have a Civil War curriculum that they've put together, which you can download if you're a teacher or, well, we're all teachers in a way, for all of us, for free, or you can get a hard copy if you want to pay for that. So Google the Civil War Trust, and it will be valuable information for you. Ken Stark is joining us, award-winning book illustrator and author. He's the author of the children's book Marching to Appomattox, The Foot Race That Ended the Civil War, illustrator of Seeing the Elephant, A Story of the Civil War. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our next call is Susan on the road. Hi, Susan.
Hi there. Good morning. I want to share two bits of information. One is that, to my knowledge, the National Cemetery in Springfield, Missouri, is unique in that the cemetery itself is divided north and south, with Union soldiers on one side and Confederate soldiers on the other that died at Wilson's Creek Battlefield outside of Springfield.
Oh, my.
And once upon a time, when I was a child anyway, on the U.S. Memorial Day, they would put the appropriate flags on each grave. I'm not sure they still do that. But it was rather remarkable to see. The other that I wanted to mention with regard to children, and I'm a parent of elementary school children, is I'm a little nervous about glorifying the competitive warrior class over against the information about just how brutal a conflict this was. But one of the really helpful pieces I found is a book in the Magic Treehouse series geared for elementary children written by Mary Pope Osborne, in which 8 and 9-year-old brother and sister travel back in time to the Civil War to a military hospital and meet Clara Barton, who is providing emergency care to both to soldiers on both sides. And they meet a drummer boy from the Confederate side, and they meet a freed slave who is now fighting with the Union, and they get to hear those stories in very personal ways. And I think Osborne does a great job of introducing some complex history at an elementary level. So I recommend it to your listeners.
Thank you. And you want to tell a story briefly, Ken, of Seeing the Elephant, because it tells a fairly deep story for young children as well, focusing on a family.
Yeah. Excuse me. The story is partly true and partly fiction. It begins with a boy whose two brothers are going off to the Civil War, and he's left wishing that he was old enough to go too. And it stresses the fact that he sees the South as a bunch of monsters, and as you know, it's necessary in order to have a war to create monsters on the other side. And so he saw them all as bad people, and he comes to a military hospital with his aunt, who is a nurse there. And up until this point, it is still nonfiction. I mean, nonfiction. But the fictional part is where he meets a young rebel soldier there who has lost his arm in battle. And at first he wants nothing to do with this soldier because, after all, his brothers are fighting the rebels. And so he doesn't want to befriend a rebel, but he becomes friends with this man. And since the man is lost his right arm, he writes a letter home to his family. And through this writing and talking with the rebel soldier, he comes to see him as a human being. And without giving away the end of the story, it's a pretty telling and touching story about how tolerance is the best thing.
Mm-hmm. And at what point, because this was a tremendously brutal, brutal, long war, and you really feel that, you can smell it in the air when you go to places like Gettysburg, and the horrors of war just enter you and enter your dreams and your nightmares. At what point, because it is an important tale to tell about how brutal this can be, when can we start teaching that, do you think, Mary?
You know, I think, as the caller indicated, there are ways you can sort of talk about these things in age-appropriate ways. Clara Barton is a wonderful sort of entry into that. She's this she did such wonderful work as a nurse, and trying to help reunite missing or families find their loved ones. So she's a really great sort of entree into that sort of message. The idea that war is difficult is one that, as the caller very rightly indicated, is one that we do have to emphasize. You don't want to glorify this to children or people of any age. There are really they say the phrase is the horrors of war for a reason. But as she also indicated, there are so many sides to the war. There are the life on the home front, the families left behind, the narratives of nurses, the narratives of freed African Americans. Really, there's a whole wonderful world of the Civil War. The stories we have to tell aren't just the generals on the battlefield, and they're not just the privates on the battlefield either. This was an event that touched the lives of everyone alive
right
at that time. And I think that's a really important thing to emphasize, to give it a well-rounded picture, to avoid that idea that you're just glorifying guns and you're glorifying bloodshed.
Right. Thanks to both of you. We are plumb out of time. I'm sorry, but the hour zipped on by. Thank you very much for being with us, Ken and Mary. Thanks. We also want to tell our listeners that I'm sorry so many of you are still on hold here, which is good in some ways because you're a great involved audience. If you want to just go to our Facebook page, you want to give recommendations of places to go, please go to that page. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and write down your thoughts about where people ought to visit or events that are coming up, and other listeners can go to that site. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook. Ken Stark, books are Marching to Appomattox, The Foot Race That Ended the Civil War, and Seeing the Elephant, which he illustrated, a story of the Civil War, both published by Putnam. Mary Coik, Deputy Director of Communications for the Civil War Trust, editor of Hallowed Ground. They have a curriculum for Civil War, 2-week curriculum, and you can go to the Civil War Trust and download it. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Chrissy Peace for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios, and thanks everybody for all of your calls. Until tomorrow, great conversations ahead.